Welcome to episode 56 of Booty and Bossy Eat, Drink, Knit. Ba, 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 ba. And
Happy
Happy
New
New Year!
Year! Yay!
We thought we should start the new year with a recipe that Booty found that's healthy, vegetarian, because maybe we're all feeling like we perhaps overindulged a little in bit over the holidays. So, Booty, do you want to take us through the Instapot curry with chickpeas, spinach, and tomatoes? And it's from Foodie Eats by Gary White.
Yes. And a little disclosure here. Gary White said he's not pretending that this is in any way authentically Indian curry, but it's so good. So I love it. We realized that it meets all the Booty and Bossy criteria of being one pot, pretty much ingredients that you have in your larder. Maybe coconut milk if you don't tend to have that on hand, but that's easy to keep on hand. So you basically just saute a cup of yellow onions diced in 4 tablespoons of olive oil. I did get myself a little present. Well, I got myself a lot of presents, let's be real. But I got at Sur La Table, they had one of those chopper devices that you basically put your vegetables, and I mostly use it for onions and peppers and maybe carrots, and you pushes it through. It's really nice. I'll put a link if anybody, we don't get any kickback for this, but I have found it's really nice. It makes my prep much faster. So you saute the onions in the olive oil, add some sea salt. He says 2.5 teaspoons of sea salt. That's a lot. I maybe do more like 1 teaspoon. 2 tablespoons fresh ginger grated. We've talked about this before. If you get the Costco or whatever, a large quantity of ginger, you can just keep it in the freezer and then you grate it while it's frozen with the peel on.
With the peel on. And the great thing about doing it when it's frozen like that is that you don't get all of the sort of stringy stuff because it's frozen.
Right. And
So,
it's easier to grate than when it's
yeah.
fresh and it all just kind of goops up and everything. And I like the ginger, so I would do 2 tablespoons of the ginger. Definitely fresh. I mean, you got it in your freezer. So
Yeah.
2 tablespoons garlic or not.
Or yes, the garlic is very good. Yes, 2 tablespoons is not too much.
And he says 4 tablespoons curry powder, and we use the Jamaican curry powder that Kim Davis told us about. That is going to be quite the kick.
There's two kinds, the hot and then the regular. And I use the hot, and I think I probably, when I make it again, which I definitely will, I think I might do sort of half hot and half regular because I have two giant jars of each of them.
Right, which is great. And then 2 cans of fire roasted tomatoes diced. I didn't have fire roasted, I just used regular. So, whatever you have, you don't want to drain that because you're going to deglaze the pot with that extra juice. And then 2 cans of coconut milk and 2 cans of chickpeas. Drained. Basically, you saute the onions in the olive oil, then you add the ginger, the garlic, the curry powder, you kind of stir that up. You add the tomatoes, coconut milk, and chickpeas. If you have an Instapot, you're going to turn off the saute. I always forget to do that step. It'll beep at you if you don't do that. So turn off the saute and then seal it, and you're gonna cook it on high for 5 minutes and then let it. Don't do the natural release, do the automatic release. I don't know that it matters all that much, but anyway, if you don't have an Instapot, which Bossy
Which
does.
I do not. Yes. Because I feel like I don't need more appliances. But yeah, I looked up and it seems like for 5 minutes in the Instapot, it's about equivalent to 15 or 20 minutes on the stovetop, just cooking it under medium heat, stirring it occasionally. I liked how some of it evaporated a little bit and it got a little more concentrated, and it makes a nice sauce. It's kind of thicker than a soup or a stew, but a nice rich sauce with all that coconut milk. And then tell about the end.
And the final step is he has you adding 16 ounces of fresh baby spinach. We both did it with kale because I think that when you have the leftovers, the kale stands up a little bit better than the spinach. So if you're going to eat it all, do the spinach. If not, do the kale, either way. But that just gives it a really nice, like the green with the color pop with
Creamy. It's got this kind of the nice with the tomato and coconut. It's got this nice sort of creamy, more. It's just like this nice, rich, warm bowl of goodness on a cold, rainy day. And I made it with rice. And I like the timing of this recipe. You prep the tomatoes, and then while that's cooking, you get the ginger and the garlic ready, and then you just dump everything in. And then once you've made that, you start the rice while that's cooking, and everything comes out at about the same time.
You could add meat if you want. If you got some meat eaters, you could add chicken or beef, or you could add
Pork.
tofu at the, I would add the tofu at the end,
Yep.
but if you're going to do the meat, you could saute it with the onions
Yeah.
beginning.
I added at the end a handful of golden raisins because I've been cleaning out my cabinet and I found some golden raisins that were not expired, unlike many other things in that cabinet. So I threw those in and that was really good because then you got the right at the end, you got this nice pop of sweetness. I think if I had had some fresh cilantro around, I would have put that in for a nice pop of herb at the end too. I think though that would have been.
It's really rare that there's anything that isn't better with lime and cilantro. And I think lime could be good with this too.
Yeah, could.
Little squirt of lime, cilantro. Yes. So good.
No, but it's perfect recipe for starting the new year, quick, easy prep, all the stuff in your larder, one pot. It's versatile because you can add the meat. And so, Ludi and Bossy give it two thumbs up. Try it, do some additions or make some changes. Oh, I thought it would have been really good with wide egg noodles too. Or you could do quinoa
If
if
you
you
want to be
wanted a
super healthy,
healthy option.
because it's January and everybody's back to healthy.
Yeah.
Well, Bossy, and speaking of New Year's, I think a lot of people, knitters, but what really everybody, they're looking at cleaning out, right? So this is the time when we're thinking about our stash. Bum, bum,
Well, and
bum.
I was thinking about why, I mean, it's sort of the new year kind of thing, but also there's something about like getting out all the Christmas stuff or whatever holiday decorate and then putting it all away that you have to open up that closet and those bins and you start thinking about it. But
I recently read that a lot of storage units become available in January because people are determined not to pay for those storage units. Then they get filled up again. I mean, they don't stay. But yeah, it's a thing, right? And
So Booty and I read Clara Park's A Stash of One's Own, Knitters on Loving, Living With, and Letting Go of Yarn. It's an anthology of about 23 essays. You'll recognize these names, Meg Swanson, a variety of people in the knitting world. It came out in 2017, but like we said, there's a way that it's timely and it's timeless because if you're feeling conflicted about your stash, or maybe you're what Kay Gardner calls a new baby knitter who doesn't have a stash yet, that there is a point of view in this book that is expressed that will connect with you, because it's really about, and this is why I like, yes, it's a stash and how we think about that, but it's really about much bigger and more almost philosophical things, like our relationship to things and our craft. And it's about the way that things like yarn holds memories and connects us at the same time to the future. So we're going to talk about some themes that emerge from the essays that we've found interesting. But first, we probably need to define our terms.
Yes. So according to Lila Nargi, I don't know if I'm saying that right, stash, the noun, entered our American English vernacular in 1914 with decidedly criminal overtones. Some who stashed a stash was likely a thief squirreling away stolen goods. And Bossy pointed out that in the 60s and 70s, it definitely referred to your drug stash.
Does.
I never really equated a yarn stash as like, this is my drug stash. Yeah, but she also points out that the German word for stash, which is Vorrat, don't know if I'm saying that right, is devoid of illicit overtones. It's rather like you're very cleverly saving something for a rainy day or for a future purpose.
Yeah, I love that. That connoting a stock or reserve of materials that a mindful person will need for some future purpose.
Yeah, exactly. It's the good, the bad, and the ugly here on.
Yeah. And in that same essay, Leila Nargi, I don't know how you say your name. I love this, that she went on Ravelry, because everybody puts their stashes on there, and said there were 20,647,000 skeins registered on Ravelry. The largest stashes were in California, which kind of surprised me, then New York and Texas. And she says, this is on page 21, all those stash skeins weigh in at an incredible 8.4 million pounds, more than the combined heft of a small bridge, a drilling rig, a giant sequoia, and a blue whale.
These are just the people that actually put their stash. And I have to say, probably most people don't have their
I
stash.
don't have my stash on.
I have a small percentage of my stash on Ravelry.
Well, I feel that that would require some organization on my part of actually some data entry. But anyway, if you unwind all of those, you've got almost 5 billion yards of yarn, which is 2.8 million miles, which is enough, ignoring weight and gauge, to knit 22 million socks. And do you know what this means, Booty?
There would be enough socks for all the wars.
Yeah. If we used up the collective Ravelry stash, we'd have enough socks for all of the wars in American history. The sock problem would finally be solved.
Wouldn't that be amazing? When we actually looked up the current numbers, because the book was written. Oh, man.
2017, yeah.
Yeah. So we have now 26,925,000 skeins. And there are 31,631,608 projects on Not another project.
Not another big project. Always start them. Big projects. Always start them. Yeah. But one of the themes that we really liked was, and a number of the writers talked about this, as the stash is a fiber scrapbook, sort of a keeper of memories.
Stephanie Pearl McPhee, who I love, she's so funny. She has written a bunch of books about knitting.
She's the yarn harlot, right?
Yes.
Isn't that? Yeah.
Yes, she's the yarn harlot. She has a blog. And she talks about this one skein of yarn that it's just the complete antithesis of everything that she likes about yarn, but she has it because her daughters gave it to her. And it was the first time they ever went out with their own money and picked out a ball of yarn for her.
I love how she describes it too. She says, they wrapped it in tin foil. Very smart. You don't need tape. This ball of yarn emerges glittering brilliantly in the sunshine. And they showed me how pink it was, how shiny it was, and explained essentially how it was a moonbeam of beauty, the apex of elegance. I stood there holding a ball of yarn that was exactly what you'd get if Barbie and My Little Pony dropped acid and tried to come up with a colorway. And even though it was the exact opposite of everything I like in a yarn, I loved it. It was the first time my children tried to give me a gift that reflected who I am. I can no sooner get rid of that yarn than I can set fire to their baby pictures.
And I mean, I think we all have something in our stash that is like, maybe when you were first knitting and it's some acrylic that I wouldn't touch now, whatever it is.
What would you say is your memory yarn that you're keeping because it connects you to a certain moment or, anything like that?
I don't have it anymore, but the one that I think about is the one that when I first started to learn to knit with grandma, and it was a kind of a light blue acrylic, and I just was making a ribbed scarf. And okay, full disclosure, I was mostly knitting when I was in the bathroom.
My God.
Get like 2 rows done. I don't know why I kept it in the bathroom. This could be why I no longer have it. But I think about that yarn, and that was kind of a special yarn. Had I known, obviously, that I was going to take up knitting in a much bigger way later on, then I would have saved it. But how about for you?
Yeah, I think for me, the one, and you were trying to convince me to get rid of the pink yarn that I had from knitting up the pussy hats. That was very early on when I started knitting, and I knit pussy hats for, I must have knit like 8 or 10. I remember I knitted them for my nieces, and we all went to the march in Philadelphia in 2016. I still look at that yarn and think about that. Think, oh, I don't. What if we need more pussy hats? That could happen. We do need more pussy hats, but
Right.
yeah.
And I will say that I have saved everything that mostly my daughter, I don't think my son has knit anything, but that certainly is yarn that I'm saving.
I loved how Clara Parks talked about yarn holding energy in her essay, "When It's Gone, It's Gone," which is a quote from her grandmother about cookies, and but has wide application. And she says, quote, this is on page 109, "Yarn holds energy, literally twist, but it also holds energy in the form of memories, like the skeins of Louisa Galanter's yarn that remind me of the time I spent with her, or the little blue ball of fingering weight I found in my grandma's sewing basket. Every knitter will be able to pick up a skein from her stash and each skein and tell you a complete and compelling story about it."
In that sort of vein is the vacation yarn that we have. That is the yarn that, I mean, it's a great souvenir because it fits in your suitcase. It's squishable, it's light, it's not fragile. And I think for me, having a skein or two of yarn that I got on a trip and knitting with that, just it has those memories, as Clara Parks says, that you're getting to relive your vacation memories, as well as having this thing that reminds you of the trip.
Yeah, and I love how Anne Shane, her essay is the life-changing magic of keeping it all. And she says, this is on page 46, and she's from Mason Dixon Knitting, and she says, quote, make sure that much of this yarn is purchased on vacation so that it's all larded up. I love that image of larded, like coated with sentiment and emotion and meaning to the point where you weep slightly when recalling the now defunct yarn shop where you bought it.
Mason-Dixon knitting is now Modern Daily Knitting. They changed it. It still exists. They're still running. Yeah, it's true that many yarn shops are no longer with us, which is another reason why you have to have a stash. And another topic we found over and over again was grief and how yarn can be such a comfort. I think sort of the classical scenario is that somebody's stash after they die goes to their children. And Franklin Habit had a wonderful essay about how his mother was really into sewing and how he just coveted all of her sewing accoutrement, and she was always telling him, no, this is not for you. This is a girl thing. This is not a boy thing. But toward the end of her life, she recognized that he could do things that are traditionally girl things. And so when she passed away, what happened with all of her sewing gear? That was just a sweet,
Yeah,
poignant
I love
scene.
the arc of that essay because it started off with him being told that, you know, this is not a boy thing, but when he became an adult, that was really something that they shared. It had none of the negative things at the end of his mother's life. It was about his connection to her through those things. I was really struck by, I mean, this Rachel Herron's The Comfort yarn, where she talks about one of her friends calling and saying that her only son had been killed in a car accident. I don't know, that's the worst possible thing.
Right, that was horrific.
And I loved what she said, that here's the thing, as makers, we fix things. That's what we do. It's our superpower. We're good at it. When it comes to grief and loss, though, there's no fixing. And I thought that was very poignant. You know, she wasn't trying to say that knitting will solve anything, but just being there and having something to do with your hands, that's going to help you. But being there is kind of the only thing you can do in those situations.
I remember being in a situation where someone was dying of cancer, and I had my knitting, and he was watching football because, you know, he couldn't do a whole lot. And so just sitting and watching football. So, and I'm not super into football, but just sitting there knitting was a way to be there. And I treasure that time.
Well, and another one that had a poignant arc was Amy Herzog. She talked about how her mother died when she was 21, and she lost five relatives within 8 months, and I think she had a miscarriage too. And she starts collecting yarn. She says it became an ongoing attempt to find beauty still left in the world, a way to connect to the past that I was losing because some of the relatives she lost were people who taught her to knit. But then she moved away from that, and she says now she doesn't keep a stash because she wants to fully inhabit only her present self and have her creativity reflect who she is right now. And she says, quote, I don't want to shackle tomorrow's creativity to the place I am today, which I thought was interesting. And a lot of the writers talked about how their ideas about a stash sort of evolved depending on what they needed at that moment. Some of them definitely wrote against having a stash, and others keep it all.
Exactly. There's sort of two ways of thinking. One is that you need a large stash to be inspired, and the other is that it's an albatross and that you're not going to be able to be fully free if you feel burdened by having things that you haven't yet worked with. Clara Park says most knitters dwell somewhere between, gosh, I love my yarn, and am I a hoarder? So, where do you fall? Like, do you feel like you have a good stash that you're happy with, or do you feel like your hoarder?
I don't have that big of a stash, so I don't feel like I'm a hoarder of yarn. I would feel like I'm more of a hoarder of china, I would say. I've got way too much china. I don't know why I think it's important to have Christmas china and Thanksgiving china and spring tea party china and University of Pennsylvania china.
Yeah, I have a
Why,
lot
booty?
of
Yeah, that's
well,
a hoarder.
some of that you've inherited, and I think that happens a lot. I feel like I have a bit of a problem, like that I have a pressure to knit with things. I mean, I have probably 30 sweater quantities of yarn, and that's just the sweater quantities, which is a lot. But I'm excited about those.
You're a hoarder.
Yeah, I'm excited about those sweaters, though. I have culled my stash to the point where I really don't have things that I question, like, do I really want to work with this? I think at the time that a stash of one's own was compiled, the Marie Kondo method of tidying up was very popular. So several people in this compilation talk about that and whether it sparks joy. And there's somebody who says, of course it sparks joy, it's yarn.
Yeah, I'm a knitter. Somebody did say, and I do think this is true, and I remember you telling me this, and this came up in Marie Greene's book, The Joy of Yarn, that in order to be able to shop your stash, you need to be able to see it. And I'm not so much in a position where I can have it all out. I kind of have it in bins, and you made me organize it by color and sort of some and keep projects together. But I do think if I could have it out and look at it, I think I would feel like it was more inspiring to me and would get me excited instead of the bin I got to get out to find
Yes.
the thing.
Now I don't have my yarn out. I have it in bins. And I think the way around that, I've been pondering this, but I think the way around that is maybe to take pictures of what's in the bin and have a book or something that shows you specifically. I mean, without actually doing the data entry on Ravelry, because I think you can look at a picture of a yarn and know what it is, probably. And so that might be a sort of happy medium of not being that much work, but still without having to pull out each thing and figure out what
That
you
sounds
want.
like a lot of work to me.
To me, it doesn't sound that bad. It sounds better than having to enter every skein on Ravelry.
I did like what Anna Maltz says, that there's a lot of connecting the past to the present. There's a way that the stash is almost like a repository for this perpetual present. And I loved what Anna Maltz says. She says, quote, this is on page 79, there's a deep optimism in how much we acquire and keep around, and in our belief that we can make and learn from that vast quantity in a single lifetime. This goes back to the idea of if you have a project in the works, you can never die.
Exactly. And I do think that there is an optimism about having 30 sweater quantities of yarn. I can knit pretty much any weight of sweater with what I have on hand.
One of the writers, and I'm not sure I'm going to be able to find it, but she talks about how the stash makes you ready for all contingencies. You
Right.
know, the closing of yarn stores, a snowstorm, whatever it is,
Yeah.
you will have something to knit.
The
And
middle of the night urge to cast on some new project. Exactly. Which is important. Yeah, when I loved how Kay Gardner says when the baby knitters come to her and they say, "Just let me know what I should buy." And she's like, "Oh, ha, 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 ha. I have enough yarn and supplies to teach 45 people at the same time."
And I loved what Anna Maltz talks about stash being a kind of library of yarn. And why is it that nobody ever questions you having books, but It is that endless reserve or a kind of collection. And she makes the point, and I love this, that some of my favorite books are ones I haven't read yet. Before reading a book, it is open to all my fantasies of the wonderful takes and answers it will contain. It is everything I want it to be. The possibilities are endless. But the moment I read it, the book becomes what it is, anchored by the words as they intentionally appear on the page and by my interpretation of them. Until then, they can be whatever I want them to be, a little like yarn before it becomes knit. I feel about my yarn stash as I do about my library. It is the record of much of my history, promise, potential, inspiration, learning, and space to dream. I won't read every book that I own, and I won't knit every centimeter of yarn, and some of it is better that way. I
Yeah,
thought that was lovely.
it is. I don't know if it's her or someone else who talks about the how yarn and goes with all the books, whereas when she's packing,
Yes.
and she realizes it's kind of the perfect marriage, because if it's a box full of books, it's too heavy, but the yarn in there kind
I'm
of,
kind of sticking in the corners and
that makes the box the perfect weight.
yeah.
And it's true.
No, but it reminded me of that the Keats Ode on a Grecian Urn. Do you remember reading that in high school?
Yeah.
Yeah, where he says, "Heard melodies are sweet, but those unheard are sweeter. Therefore, you soft pipes, play on, not to the sensual or the hearing ear, but the more endeared, pipe to the spirit ditties of no tone."
We've talked about whether stash is an inspiration or an albatross, but I really loved the feminist take on this that Debbie Stoller had. And hers is, I think, the last say that how women will often say, "Don't tell my husband, I've got to hide this from my husband." And why do we feel like we need to hide something that is purely for ourselves? On page 180, "We knit because we enjoy it. It announces to the world that she has decided to do something just for herself in the pursuit of only one thing, pleasure." End quote.
Yeah, and I loved the title of Debbie Stoller's essay. It was "A Stash of One's Own: Yarn as a Feminist Issue," which of course relates back to the Virginia Woolf, who was a knitter, as we know. A room of one's own, that space to be yourself. And I don't know about you, Booty, but I do get really hung up on this. I can't just start the day with knitting. I have to do all of the other housework or whatever. And then if I finish it, then I can sit down and do. I constantly have guilt about.
Yeah, well, and I think part of the reason that I started knitting was that I could do it while I was watching TV or spending time with my husband or on calls. It's not just the knitting, it's while doing this other thing that I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah. Well, no, and for me, it was swim meets. It was a way for me to do something. I should say, I did start off grading papers during swim meets. And I found I wasn't as charitable as I probably should be. So I bagged that and started knitting. But even then, I think it still comes from that idea that, it's the no idle hands syndrome, that you always have to be busy doing something. Most women sort of feel that way. I also, though, liked how Lilith Green connected it to the whole body imagery stuff. She, or the title of her essay was "Work in Progress," and she talks about how women are constantly being bombarded with messages: be thin but not too thin, be curvy but not fat, wear makeup but not too much, look feminine but not too girly, don't dress in anything dowdy or unflattering, look sexy but not slutty. I thought that was a great summation of the sort of mixed messages that women get. I loved how she connected it to, here's the thing that I've just started to figure out. My body is not a problem to be solved. So she's learning to I stash for the body I have now and will have for years to come, not for the body others think I should have or that I think I should have, but this body here and now.
When I love it, when she started dieting, she was rewarding herself by buying a new pair of jeans or boots, and then she realized that all of those rewards were actually punishments, because the message was, you can only have this if you stay thin. If you gain weight, then those jeans are no longer.
Well, so just a really rich book about this thing that most knitters have some kind of stash. How you think about that had moments of real profound thinking insight.
It's amazing because the book is about 190 pages and it packs it in there. And with a lot of the essays are short, but really an amazing array of contributors. She has a daughter of a shepherd, she has a spinner, she has one of my favorites was the social worker. Her essay was titled Fear Not. And basically goes on to justify all the reasons that it's good for you to have a staff. And yarn dyers, the MDK ladies, I mean, really a wonderful, wonderful contributors.
The woman who was the social worker is Sue Shankle. I loved what she said. I mean, these are like words to live by besides what you think about stash. Many people in my practice spend inordinate amounts of time trying to explain to others, quote, what it's like to be me. It rarely works. People have a hard enough time understanding themselves. Expecting others to get you or your love of beautiful yarn is not always realistic. That's why you need a posse, people who understand it all. And Booty, we are the posse.
We are the posse for you. You have come to the right place. Yeah, I found that so freeing because, I mean, my husband is fine with my stash. He's not complaining about it. That we don't have to justify ourselves because people are not going to understand.
Well, and I love that idea that they don't understand themselves. So how are they going to understand you and your yarn?
Exactly.
Just don't go there. Gravitate to the people who already understand, and you'll be good.
Yeah, that was liberating.
Wonderfully insightful book. So if you're looking for a good read to start the new year as you're thinking about your stash, guarding it or culling it or adding to it, whatever, wherever you are in the sort of stash spectrum of thinking, there's something in this book for you. You can read an essay or two a night. They all stand on their own, but then they also connect and talk to each other and offer response or an alternative point of view.
Yeah.
It's really a wonderful anthology.
We hope that whatever you do with your stash, well, share what you do with your stash. We'd love to hear what your goals are for the year. And
Join the conversation, the stash conversation that we've started here. Booty, I think it's time to say, whatever you do, don't
knit
knit like
like
my
my
sister.
sister.
But do check out our website, bootyandbossy.com, and do let us know what you're doing with your stash.